new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. Jeremy Warner, Joey Wagner here with you on the Illini Inquirer podcast. And today we're going to focus a little bit on kind of wrapping up spring ball. As today, it was Wednesday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you, Joey. How are you?
I don't watch Star Wars. I know what you mean. I am good. It's been an interesting day on the football front a little bit.
Never watched Star Wars. Just not interested. It's kind of like me with Marvel. I enjoy the Marvel movies. I just haven't sat down and watched all 38 of them. I'm a busy man with the children and with the website and the podcast and all that. So I just haven't done that. So any reason you haven't gotten into the Star Wars?
No, man, I remember we went to a field trip in like sixth grade, and I don't remember what Star Wars it was. And I was sitting there like, what am I doing here? I don't want to be here. We paid like $10 for this movie. I don't care what's happening. And I don't watch a lot of movies, dude. Like, I can watch three or four episodes of an hour long show and be okay. But in a movie, I just feel like I'm there forever. Man. I don't want to do this. I need Twitter.
Being around people, is that not your thing, Joey, in a movie theater?
No, dude, I'm not going to go pay. Let me get a slushie and get out of there, man. I don't need to pay the overhead cost here.
At this point in my life, Joey, I've missed it. I used to go to a movie theater, Lante and I. Maybe it's because we're a little bit older and we had kids. But going to a movie theater by yourself, getting a big tub of popcorn and a huge pop. Oh, that's heaven. Heaven for 2 hours. Don't got to think about anything else. But no, that's not what we're going to talk about here on this podcast. Joe, you and I can actually hit on basketball a little bit, and we'll do that here in a second. But we do want to talk about football. Big position change with Isaiah Williams going from quarterback to wide receiver, the long speculated move. Also, Marquez Beeson sticking at that position. And Brett Bielema's first comments on Art Sikowski, the new Rutgers transfer quarterback, and just a lot of other things. Brett talked with us for about 45 minutes today and was generous with his time about it. But before we get into all that, Joey, let us address basketball, because it has amazed me that we have not heard anything from Kentucky yet. And so this is going to be Kentucky's to announce, but from everything we've heard, everything everybody's heard, it's that Chin Coleman and Orlando Antigua are both heading to Kentucky, in a huge staff shakeup for both John Calipari and for Brad Underwood. That after such a great season with two guys who meant so much to that roster that you constructed, Illinois now needs to replace those guys. Now, I think they're actually in a better place now to hire assistants than they were when Brad Underwood came in here. And Josh Whitman reportedly put a bunch of money on at least Orlando Antigua that we know of, and was willing to give a raise to Chin Coleman as well. But there's always a bigger fish, unless you're John Calipari, apparently, or Mike Krzyzewski, or North Carolina, or Kansas. But those are the Blue Bloods for a reason, and the Blue Bloods come calling, and I can't blame Chin Coleman. I mean, what a rise he's had over the last decade, and Orlando Antigua is going somewhere where he knows he can get the best players. He knows he'll be at even more of a national spotlight. So I can't blame those guys for going. But obviously for Brad Underwood, there's a huge turning point in his program where there's at least instability right now. I think that's the scariest thing is I have no doubt, Joey, he's going to land some very qualified candidates here. It's just in the meantime, the instability and the unknown for your program is never a great thing, at least at this time of year. You feel like you can put together a good roster, but you just got to keep it together right now.
Yeah, I mean, this time of year, and by the way, the transfer rule has passed, right? I'm not saying I know anything two ways about, any interest in exiting Illinois as a player, but I'm just saying at a time where you can do it free of charge, basically, it just adds another layer to this uncertainty and this Illinois fans perpetually feel on edge of like, okay, what's next? What's going to happen next? And And really, Jeremy, a lot of this is, one, it is a big shakeup. Orlando Antigua and Jim Coleman are good coaches. They're plugged in. They're good recruiters. They have their fingerprints all over this roster. There's no doubt about that. Ask Iota Sumu about Chin Coleman, and you might talk to him for an hour and a half about everything Chin did. But the angle of just the shock value, right? And it's like, okay, it's not like one leaves, they replace him, and then another leaves. And it's like two right there. And it's your two guys, like your two pillars of assistant coaches. And so you now it's like, oh my gosh, this is definitely going to look so different. Whereas if it was one in May, one in July, and you kind of have a buffer window there. It's just all at once happening. And I don't blame Chin. Orlando makes so much sense, right? He and Cal go back all the way back. Cal, really needed Orlando, right? Like that was not Kentucky like we've known Kentucky with Cal, and Orlando and him have a very good rapport. And I don't really, I mean, it's no surprise to me that Orlando would go and want to help out somebody who is there for him. And Chin, it's good for him, man. I mean, it's a continue to move forward. I know people can argue, was this a lateral move for him? I don't think so. I mean, I'm not trying to push a knock on Illinois basketball, but it's Kentucky basketball. Is Kentucky basketball for a reason.
And it's not like Kentucky under Tubby Smith either. This is Kentucky under John Calipari. No matter what you think of him personally and what you think he does to get players, whatever you think, he does it incredibly well. And he gets great talent, which is a huge part of the job. And for most years, he's going very far with them, and he gets a lot out of them. And he has helped develop a lot of, what would I say, 100 millionaires? Right, like think about how many guys that have gone through that program have gone on to be 100 millionaires in the pros, and it's not, it's not like they would have been that anyway. Like some of those guys would have been, but he really helped develop them. And I think you compare him to what like Coach K has done with those kind of talents. And Zion was great, but Cam Reddish, even though he was a lottery pick, he didn't develop that much. And, like some of those guys, R.J. Barrett didn't develop that much. And, Jalen Johnson, I didn't think he had a great freshman year this past year. Kentucky this past year didn't, but man, like he keeps developing lottery picks, and they go first round when they go to Calipari most of the time. So he's just a different, he's at that different level. And it is Kentucky. And when you heard Kentucky is interested in both of them, no matter what Whitman did, I thought it would be very, very difficult to keep either of them just because it's such a great opportunity. You have Kentucky, you have John Calipari on your resume. I think it does make Orlando Antigua more appealing for the next head coaching job. I think it puts Chin Coleman on a fast track. All of a sudden, now he's recruiting for Calipari. DeSumo was a huge line on his resume. Adam Miller was a huge line on his resume. He's recruited some other kids here outside of Chicago that was great for Illinois, including Brandon Podzimski. But I think now he can go get 5 stars at Kentucky. That just elevates his career track so much. And he's probably a couple years possibly from a head coaching gig. So for both those guys, like I thought Orlando Antigua, when Underwood hired him, I didn't think he'd be here 4 years, to be honest with you, Joey. So I thought at some point, whether it was this year or next year, he was probably going to go somewhere regardless. But losing them both at the same time is so tough. And let's be honest, I mean, Gonzaga still has an assistant coaching job out there, and Stephen Gentry is a Gonzaga alum. And obviously Mark Few knows him really well. So it's just that this could be a crazy year where you have the best year you've had in a long time, and then you might have to replace, you have to replace at least two of those guys. And what if you had to replace all three? It's just, it's crazy. And I think Underwood could get great candidates. It's just like a hard reset. Only it's not like, Joey, you resetting your Nintendo. It's like your older brother pulling the plug, and you got to go back and start the game over again.
You know, not only are they having to replace at least two assistant coaches, by the way, they have to replace Iota Sumu. And like we're looking at this stuff that isn't basketball players at this point.
And maybe
point,
Kofi right? Coburn, right?
And maybe Kofi Coburn. And that is a tall task. I will say, Jeremy, it is Kentucky who came calling. It's in the same way that most times when you cover a recruit and it's okay, so-and-so's in, Kentucky offered. And then the tenor of the conversation always changes to, well, if they push, You know, it's Kentucky. It's the same thing in football. If Alabama, if Ohio State, if Clemson, if Notre Dame, if those teams start to get involved and they want to be involved, it's just this aura of what these programs are to their respective sports, and it's hard to overcome. And it's not all that different if you're an assistant coach, right? I mean, it's a little different, right? A little bit, but the same thing. It's like, ooh, it's Kentucky, and it's this being that is this program, and it's hard to turn away from. So I don't.
If there's one silver lining, it's that you were a good enough program and had good enough people that people want to steal from it. But it just I don't know how many fans are taking solace in that right now.
Probably not a lot right now. That might take a little bit of time, but I understand it. I understand all of this is kind of like bubbling. It's more than bubbled up. But, on the bottom of it is that the loss too early, in their opinion. Right? So it's just this whole melting pot of just like, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And because
if you had made a Final Four and these guys are stolen away, you just say, thank you, guys. Thank you for what you did. We'll be fine. Everything's cool here. We made the Final Four.
You're still cooking back beers from the parade right at this point if you made a Final Four. So I understand all the emotions that go into it. But college basketball, man, when you start getting into the echelon that Illinois wants to be in, things like this happen where they poach from your staff, and not always two at once to the same school. Probably more times than not, it isn't going to be that.
Yeah.
But all of this stuff is just kind of part of being quote unquote back, right? It's tough that goes into it, but it goes into it.
Yeah, and I'm going to have a podcast with Piper where we kind of break down candidates or who we think could be in it, who we hear. And my biggest thing right now would be keeping that roster together. And Underwood has a big role in that. And I don't think Kentucky's going to steal anybody from Illinois. I don't see that happening. And I don't think Chin and Orlando would want to do that. And to be honest with you, I don't think Kentucky has to do that, right? They can go try and land Ty Washington or C.J. Frederick or Marcus Carr, potentially. Like that, they go big game hunting. Not that, you know, somebody in Illinois' roster, I don't even want to throw names out there to speculate so fans freak out, but like, they don't even have to do that. So I don't think Cal will do that. I don't think Orlando and Chin would do that. But you do have to keep this roster together. It's important to get those hires in. And most importantly, this is a test of Brad Underwood, the CEO of the program, right? Because Brad is leading everything, and Brad deserves a ton of credit for all of this. But Brad's not getting this talent without Orlando Antigua and Chin Coleman. Like, they did so much heavy lifting. Brad is probably not the biggest fan of recruiting, to be honest with you. He does it, and like, he obviously resonates with people, and he builds a great culture, and X's and O's wise, I think he's done a great job, and I'm a big fan of what he does. But like, you need guys who can get dudes. And Orlando Antigua and Chin Coleman were able to do that. And now you have a roster still with some of those guys, whether it's Kofi coming back for another year, whether it's Andre Curbelo and the young guys you got coming in, Luke Goody, RJ Melendez, Brandon Podzimski, outside of Goody, you know, they got all of them. Omar Payne involved in that, Coleman Hawkins. So like, you got to go find other guys. And there are other guys that are available to do it, but you got to make it all work. And this is a test of Brad Underwood, because every coach is going to have to replace coaches at some time, but you got to keep that culture going. You got to keep that program moving forward. And no one's expecting Big Ten championship or Big Ten tournament championship next year, but you got to make sure that the momentum doesn't all of a sudden just disappear, Joey, and I don't think it will, but it's just with all this uncertainty, it's a possibility. Change can be good sometimes, and change can be really negative sometimes.
Yeah, I'm with you. Momentum's everything in college athletics, right? I mean, it's a buzz. How many, you know, you're on TV, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're winning it. You can sell momentum to recruits, man. You just do it. And I'm with you. I don't think this is all going to crumble beneath the feet of Brad Underwood. I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Huge. You got Trent and DeMonte back. Like, I think that's massive. We probably didn't talk enough about that. But just to have them for another year gives you a little bit of stability. And two guys that are basically coaches, right? Like on the floor.
I will also say with Chen and Orlando, what you said, you know, I think Kentucky is interested in, one, their coaching acumen, right? I mean, Orlando has a book of guys, bigs, he's helped get better. And I mean, that you can't hide from that. The same with Chin Coleman and the guards. He's got a, you know, he's building this book of guards that he's helped, but they're interested in that and the connections that these guys have on a macro versus the micro guys that they helped get on the Illinois roster. I'm suspecting. I mean, that makes sense in my mind to me. But yeah, man, it's a change that happens in college sports, and it's a lot to process, especially when it happens all at once. But this is a test. This is really
huge test.
I don't want to say this is the first big test for Brad Underwood, because I certainly don't believe that it is. Though, as I say that, I am struggling to.
Well, the first 2 years, I mean, just taking over that roster was rough enough. And then.
And to get the guys to come and to get the IOs, the COVID, I mean, those are tests of, okay, we've stabilized the ship a little bit, and now we're bringing in the talent, right? And it's just a process. But this is huge. I mean, this is a huge test to get these hires, to get them right, to get them quickly, to get all of this where it doesn't – if this lingers out 2.5, 3 weeks, you might be looking around wondering what's going on a little bit. And 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks is probably about the point where I'm like, anyone? I think it'll probably go quickly. It should go quickly. I don't think they've been sitting on their hands.
We know that. I mean, Brad's already underway. I mean, Kentucky might not have announced these things yet, but like Brad is at work doing what he needs to do to get these guys in place. And I don't know how quickly that'll be with job postings and all of that, but he will have his guys pretty quickly here. And, you know, Brad's got connections throughout the industry and an agency that knows what it's doing. So I have no doubt. Like I think with what Brad has done, what he has proven, what this program has done the last 2 years, having the best record in the Big Ten, and Josh Whitman giving a little peek of what his war chest could be. Now, I don't think they're going to spend 1.0 or 1.2 million per year on an assistant just because they would have in Antigua. I think that was different. Now, could they spend 600,000 on the right guy or 700,000 on the right? Possibly. I think Whitman has shown that he is going to do whatever it takes to make sure this basketball program remains one of the best in the Big Ten and potentially one of the best in the country. So I have no doubt, and from what I've heard, there are some really intriguing candidates like that are really interested, like high major proven recruiters who are interested in this job and in this program. And I think that's a credit to what Orlando, Chin, and mostly Brad have built there. I think the Illinois brand right now is pretty strong. And I think for a lot of guys who might not be in the most stable position or are looking for an upgrade or whatever it is, I think Illinois is very attractive in the industry, even though this is kind of a weird time to be adding assistants.
It is. And I will say with Josh Whitman, I'm with you. I think that 1.0, 1.2 was – we really like Orlando. Everybody in the country really likes Orlando. We're not going to go down without a fight. But I think Josh Osher also showed his hand, and this isn't new. He's a competitive cat, man. He does not like to lose. And if he can make it work to get what he wants, what Brad wants, I think that it's just what we know of Josh, right? And I'm not saying he's going to unfurl the bank for every last guy who calls and every last interview that's set up. But if it's the right fit, I can see Josh really making a move. So I don't know, man. We'll see. A lot of ball game left.
Yeah, we'll have plenty more to break this down as we go along. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about wrapping up spring ball and some big position changes for Brett Bielema's program. That's next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
All right, Joey, we spent a lot of time the last time we were together on the podcast talking about Art Sikowski and basically speculating and being like, yeah, this has to mean Isaiah Williams is moving to wide receiver, correct? And that is the case. And it makes a lot of sense to me. Brett Bielema pressed on it a little bit today and did admit something I heard the last couple of weeks, that Isaiah played a little bit receiver during spring ball but wasn't sure whether it was a full position change. But Brandon Peters is your starter right now. Art Sikowski, the Rutgers transfer, is coming in to give you depth, possibly the long-term starter. We'll dive a little bit more into him as we go along here. But no surprise, Isaiah Williams is going to wide receiver, which has been long speculated. He is talented enough to play quarterback, talented enough to make a difference there, but obviously is not, like for most schools, he wasn't what they wanted in a quarterback. But it's also the reason we can talk about this and have speculated for so long, Joey, is he can be a difference maker at wide receiver on teams across the country. I mean, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Auburn, Florida State, all these big-time schools had offered him as a wide receiver. So now in Brett Bielema's scheme, makes a lot more sense there. And, you know, some people thought, would Isaiah be angry at this because he wanted to play quarterback? He got a shot. He got a shot from Lovie Smith's staff. He got a shot from Brett Bielema this spring, and I think he saw that his best chance to get on the field, and to be honest with you, his best long-term shot at making money playing this game is probably at wide receiver, and he's going to get on the field if he plays wide receiver. So what were your thoughts, Joey, when Brett Bielema finally said, yep, this is happening?
Yeah, I mean, certainly newsworthy, right? I mean, that kind of dominated the presser, and it didn't take an awfully long time to get it out. But not a surprise, Jeremy. I mean, it really, really was. Could Isaiah have been a serviceable college quarterback? Yeah, I think he could have. I don't know what your definition of serviceable is, but I don't think he goes out there and spikes the ball into the ground 25 times a game. You know, he has skills at quarterback. That's not a secret by any stretch of the imagination. But I think the Big Ten Network or one of its affiliates tweeted out a video today of all the times Isaiah made somebody miss in the open field. You can get into that situation much more frequently if he's a wide receiver. And we can go back through all the offers that Tony Peterson and Brett Bielema have offered to quarterbacks. We can look at Brandon Peters. We can look at Art, and we can say, okay, big arm, tall, pro style. If you go 24/7, these are all pro style quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's boom, 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 boom. But I mean, it happens quickly. Isaiah's a dual threat. It's a little different. But I will also say, Jeremy, wide receiver is a position of need. I mean, it just is. And you have this guy who he could be your backup, and there's an awful lot of value in being a backup quarterback. Everybody. I mean, it's good work if you can get it, man. Yeah. It really is. And you're pretty popular in a lot of circles if you're the backup.
Is Art Sikowski popular yet? I don't think he's popular yet.
Probably gonna, again, maybe a little time. that might take a second. But or you can put Isaiah out there right now and give him a chance right now. I don't, you know, we'll see how soon right now is come fall. But that's where he can make a difference this season. And you still have Brandon on the field, who is really, I mean, we're getting some pretty good reads on Brandon. Physically, they love him, it sounds like, or like him enough because they made this move. And as they start to put the rest of this together, Jeremy, but it makes a lot of sense. It's not surprising. I mean, I don't think any of us on the beat fell out of our chairs in our respective Zooms when Brett said this. But it changes a lot of the dynamic kind of around the quarterback room, around the wide receiver room. There's just a lot of moving parts to this, and we're not going to know how it all shapes out for a little bit.
Yeah, let's get into that. Number one is my biggest concern about talking about this move, because when we talked about the quarterback position in our huge podcast a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, we talked about, like, reason I'm nervous about moving Isaiah is because I'm nervous about what's behind him at quarterback. Once they added Sitkowski, who I think at worst, like I don't think he's freshman year at Sitkowski at Rutgers, where it was the worst situation. He wasn't ready, and they just threw him in there because there's a desperate staff with this potential savior, and they're just like, let's see what we got, right? Like, that was unfair to him, and he was terrible. The last 2 years when he's gone in games, he's been serviceable. He's been a serviceable player who helped them beat Purdue, helped them beat Maryland last year. So I don't think you go into next year with Art Sitkowski as your starter and think, great, but I think you go in with him as your backup and be like, okay, at least we know we raised our floor a little bit there, and we got another guy that we feel like if he goes in the game, we got a chance to win in this offense, right? But now you can put Isaiah, who is your most talented skill player, right, at wide receiver now. And we've seen it. You mentioned it, like the highlights of what he can do in the open field. That's not fluky. Now, he's got to prove he can catch the ball, he can run the route tree, all those things.
He can take the punishment, right? I mean, yeah. But first, I should also – I didn't mean to interrupt you. I mean, sorry, but we've seen him take a little bit of punishment at quarterback. Like, yeah. Dude got hit a lot against Rutgers and got up every stinking time. So that came to my mind initially, but I think he'll be okay.
5'10", 180, 185, and Isaiah's gotten noticeably bigger since I saw him at Trinity Catholic. Like, he can play that. Like, he can play that position and be the slot receiver you've been trying to recruit for a really long time and give you a weapon that Tony Peterson can get really, really creative with and put it with Daniel Barker and Luke Ford and potentially Brian Hightower and Chase Brown and, you know, Reggie Love. And all of a sudden you're starting to look at those weapons and you're like, all right, this is a much more talented group. Like, think about it. Like, Marquez Beeson is making a bigger switch for me than Isaiah Williams is. Isaiah Williams has been playing offense. He understands where he needs to be. Like, he's learned Tony Peterson's offense. He knows where those wideouts got to be. Now he's got to get with George McDonald and get those routes down and get the footwork down. But this isn't as new to him, right? Like, Marquez Beeson, he's got a defensive perspective. He played wide receiver in high school. But, dude, he could just go out and run whatever he wanted. He's beating somebody. This is a little bit different. You got to be more refined. Marquez Beeson is a top 100 prospect as an athlete. So if his knee is fine now, that's a huge upgrade talent-wise. Isaiah Williams, former top 150 athlete that everyone wanted to label him as a wide receiver, but he wanted to play quarterback. Like, that's a huge talent upgrade. So all of a sudden, you're getting some of your best talent on the team. Hightower, Williams, Beeson, those are top 247 talents. Jafar Armstrong, I think, was a top 500 prospect when he went to Notre Dame. Like, all that room got a lot more talented this spring.
It did, and
just very improving. Just very improving, yeah. Group.
And look, I don't think this is probably apples to oranges, and certainly it is. But Isaiah Williams did line up a couple times in the bowl game at slot, so it's not like this guy has never stepped foot on a college football field at wide receiver. He has almost no experience doing it, right? But I mean, he has done it a little bit, and you know, he does have this playing time again at quarterback, but he got a, you know, pretty good amount of snaps last year, and all of that will help. But the wide receiver room, Jeremy, is, I guess, maybe in practice on May 4th, it's not that different, right? I mean, we don't know what Isaiah is. We don't know what Marquez is or will be. It doesn't sound like they're going to be the same position. I will say that. Brent Bielema said there's 3 to 4 wide receiver positions within their offense, and they won't be stacked on top of each other, which indicates to me Marquez is going to be a little more on the outside, just because I don't imagine Isaiah Williams to be there.
Yeah.
But in theory, right, and I guess potential, this wide receiver room really changed a lot. And maybe that potential never reaches, right? Maybe the theory just kind of falls off, but it is there. And you could see the makings of – a position group that we looked around a few times this spring, like, oh my goodness, there's just not a lot here right now. And then you add those two, the idea of those two and Jafar Armstrong. And now you have a little more depth. It's not perfect. I wouldn't be surprised to see them still kind of parse the portal a little bit to see who, you know, what other options they have. And they should do that. But if the summer they can, you know, they're going to get the summer with Tank, right? Beginning sometime June 1st. And then as you get into training camp, there's a lot of months. I mean, there's not a lot, but there's also a lot for these guys to pick up at least the basic understandings and just let the athleticism maybe fill in some of these shorter gaps that they might have as they really, you know, put all of this position together. And again, maybe it doesn't happen, right? Like we talked about this with Art the last time. It's like, yeah, maybe it works and potentially.
I hate hedging on all this stuff.
I know, but I feel like you have to. A little bit.
Cause like we want to make sure we're saying like, hey, this receiver room isn't fixed yet. Right. But there definitely are better possibilities. That's correct. The thesis statement. Right. And that's what Brett is trying to do, is find what pieces work, where they want, get it all shuffled up, and give us the best chance to win. And Isaiah Williams can make his biggest impact now that they've added Sikowski as another quarterback and more of what they want at the position, which I would rather have a quarterback who can move a little bit. And Sikowski, he can move a little bit, but he's a pocket passer. Brandon Peters is a little bit more athletic than Sikowski is. Sikowski can buy some time, but I think Brandon's a better athlete, can run a little bit more. In the future, I'd like guys more like Donovan Leary who can move a little bit. I think Sikowski's a little bit more true to the pocket, but like I like a guy who can have a little bit more dual threat, but for what they want, this is what's worked for them. It's worked for some other teams as well. Obviously, Wisconsin's worked really well. Iowa, it's worked really well. That's what they're at. They're not asking their quarterbacks to be first, second round picks, right? They're asking their quarterbacks to be kind of another guy on the offense who just doesn't hurt them and makes the throws that need to be made and, you know, complements a running game that is supposed to be good and tight ends and running backs who are supposed to be good, and then find some wideouts who can make some plays. And that's what they'll find out is Cam Marquez and Isaiah do those things. I'm pretty high on Isaiah at the position, to be honest with you. I'm not going to sit here today and go, yep, he's Rondale Moore, or yep, he's going to be 50 receptions next year and lead the team and breakaway touchdowns. I don't know about that, but I'm high on his transition to that position. I think he can make an immediate impact, and I think he's going to be a potentially big part of this offense.
Yeah, and that's, again, we've seen enough of him in college football playing offense to I understand how you got there, right? It's not like I'm like, I don't know, Jeremy, you're kind of on this island, man. You know, it's just
The other thing is I know Isaiah and I know who he is, and that kid is determined. That, as Brett said today, he's a leader. He's a guy you want in your foxhole, and I think he's going to be driven now that he's not a quarterback. Like that's gone. Like that's not happening. He gave it his best. That's not happening. And I have no issue. I think he's going to stay here. I think he loves it here at Illinois, and he wants to make an impact. And I think he sees his future. Like his football future is at wide receiver. I think he's going to try to be the best damn wide receiver he can be. And that's a kid who I think will, like, that will happen, just because of the guy I've gotten to know over the last 4 or 5 years.
And I want to say, I think the reason we're maybe a little hesitant to jump so both feet in with Marquez is just because he's not played offense, right? I think to me that's the big and the injury, right, as he comes back. So I don't want this to come off like Isaiah can and Marquez can't, because I think we both understand that Marquez can. But to me, I just need a little bit more. I need to see a little bit more before I go all the way in a similar way. But
we didn't see him barely this spring, right? Not just because we didn't see practice, but he was out several practices with an injury.
And also, Jeremy, you probably know Isaiah better than anybody else who covers this team, because you've covered this kid since he was he a junior? When you first meet Isaiah?
I first covered a game when he was a sophomore. And he was a junior, and Mookie Cooper was a sophomore. I got to be honest with you. I saw Mookie Cooper, and he was different. He was even different than Isaiah. But Isaiah in the open field, I mean, his agility, his change of direction is great. He's got good speed. Like, he's probably about 4.5, 4.55 guy. Like, Mookie Cooper was like a 4.4. He was just a different speed.
But I think the thing with Isaiah is, again, and Brett kind of acknowledged this in the sense of his exit meetings, and not specifically with Isaiah, but just where college athletics are kind of as a whole right now, is, man, I can go try this thing out somewhere else one time and all this is cool. Like, I'm going to give that a run. And what we see, and I don't really anticipate Isaiah going anywhere. I think you're right. He loves it here. he and Corey are, I mean, Corey Patterson are very, very close.
Shimon, Reggie, and Frenchie are all still here.
Right. And I wanted to ask Brett, and maybe this will be a down the road type of thing, but I'm curious if he had any conversations with Corey. Like, hey, how do you think this would be received? You know, I think that would be a fair thing to ask a guy who's known Isaiah longer than anybody in the city of Champaign.
Let me tell you a story. Like this would have been maybe before the pandemic, or it was last summer. Like, I was at a camp down in St. Louis, and a guy I know who coached Isaiah asked, are they moving him to wide receiver yet? And I said, what? I go, he wants to be a quarterback, man. He goes, I know, but he said, Isaiah's future is at wide receiver. And he said at that time, he knows Isaiah. He said, I think he knows that. And I think he'd be okay with it, but they want him at quarterback and he's going to do everything he can to be a quarterback. But I think Isaiah's always been open to this. I don't think he's been like, no, never doing that. I'm transferring. I'm going to another program. I just think he wanted his shot to be a quarterback. And I think Lovey obviously gave him that shot. Brett gave him that shot this spring. And Brett seemed to say today, we haven't been able to talk to Isaiah, that Isaiah was frustrated at times at his position and they came together. And I'm not sure. It's kind of like, to bring up the May 4th conversation, did Greedo shoot first? I don't know. I don't know if Bielema or Isaiah Williams brought this up, but they came to the conclusion that they both seemed to agree that this was best for him.
And to shout out a little bit to Isaiah, because he didn't just get out of town, right? I mean, I think that shows you that he cares about – I mean, so after Brett's press conference, to give a timeline, it seemed to me that Brett wanted to kind of let Isaiah – at the time that he felt was right, post however on social media or put out word, however in whichever way he wanted to, that he was going to move. Brett did not mention him in a list of position changes. But when he was asked about him, he didn't hide, right? I mean, Brett said, hey, look, you know, he's moving to wide receiver and he's going to put out more. So I think kind of reading through, I think that's what he wanted. But I don't think if Isaiah was unhappy with the move, that would have been the case. Like, I don't think he would have reasonably thought like, yeah, he's not happy, but he's going to put this on social media to celebrate this move to wide receiver. That's just not how this is going. So I think that also tells me a little bit that, you know, hey, he's really a lot of it. And then you kind of put it all the rest of it together. He's cool. I mean, he's good with this. This is, we're not talking about this if he's not.
He's got an opportunity to be a starting Big Ten high impact wide receiver, right?
We're not talking about this if he's not okay with it. Right. We're probably having a different conversation, yes. Right. But good for Isaiah, man. Good for him for,
doesn't surprise
you
me.
Know, he loved playing quarterback. He said it. And he's a really, really, I mean, he's a very, very bright kid with as a quarterback and beyond, and way beyond that. But good for him for sticking it out and not just hightailing out of here when it wasn't going to be that here.
And here's the thing, Joey, you couldn't have that guy on the sideline anymore. You couldn't have him.
You get away with it as a freshman, right? Like, okay, he's a freshman. You can buy a little time with that. You were losing time last year with that. You're running out of that a little bit.
You can't have your best athlete standing on the sideline not doing anything for you. And that's why, you know, if Marquez was the third or fourth best corner and he's got a chance to be one of your better wide receivers in that rotation, move him over. If Isaiah's your best slot receiver, which I think he's got the potential to be, or at least one of the top four wideouts on your team, move him over. Get him on the field. Let Brandon Peters throw him the ball and let Isaiah do some work, right? If you feel comfortable with Brandon Peters doing everything else, well, still you can get Isaiah Williams the ball 5 to 10 times a game that way. So, I totally agree with this move. And I think Isaiah sees that, like, hey, this is the best way for me to impact the team and for me to potentially impact my long-term football playing career. All right, Marquez is staying at wide receiver. We've gone through a lot of position changes throughout.
We covered most of them in the spring, too. I don't think there were a lot today. The one that jumped out, but like before we got to Isaiah, the one that like put all the flags up for me was Cooper Davis, like moving from – outside linebacker to tie it in. Not flags in a bad way, but it's like, oh, okay, type of deal. And then Isaiah happened, and then it was like, that felt like a year ago Brett said that.
Yeah, Cooper Davis, I think, is a 4-3 defensive end. I thought when they moved him to outside linebacker, I was like, I don't know if that fits, but he's not big enough to kind of play the five technique or, you know, a defensive line interior guy. So I think he was kind of a weird fit. So what do they do with everybody right now? They're moving them to tight end, see if it works out, because they're looking for future guys behind Luke Ford and Daniel Barker. And he's a good athlete, big kid, really long kid. So I'm interested to see how that works out. They've had some success in his past moving guys from defensive end to tight end. So we'll see how that works out. I do want to mention with wide receiver, they've been really scouring the transfer market for a really long time. But now with Isaiah Marquez locked into that position, I don't think they're just trying to get a guy. They went after Jameson Williams hard. And Jameson Williams goes from Ohio State to Alabama. Alabama doesn't take many transfers, man. So they must really like Jameson Williams, or they must think they don't have two more first-round draft picks like they had the last 2 years at that position. So they take him, but Illinois was involved there. Another kid to look out for, St. Louis product, Notre Dame transfer. They go maybe get another one. Jordan Johnson, former top 247 prospect. They'll go big game hunting at that position. But now with Cooper Davis moving, Mark Mondesir, I know, moved outside linebacker, makes a lot of sense to me. But that wouldn't surprise me if they go try and find a pass rusher as well, because it's a position they're a little thin on, both for the long term especially. But Gay, Carney, Coleman, you feel good about. But Mondesir, I think, can play in a pinch there. But they might want to upgrade that if they can find a multi-year option there.
Weirdly, Jeremy, like, I didn't think a lot about outside linebacker being thin as of 2 weeks ago. And this isn't just because they moved Cooper Davis. I guess it just, like, kind of escaped me a little bit somehow. But I get all my focus was like, oh, my God, inside linebacker. I'm totally the opposite now, by the way. Like, way the opposite here. I think you could maybe even move, experiment in packages with one of those inside guys as a rusher. I think that opportunity – like a C.J. Hart opportunity would present itself.
Tariq Barnes can blitz.
Yeah, I think there's some players there. But, yeah, long-term, they need something. Totally with you on wide receiver. If you can get a dude, right, as we talked about with basketball, you close it down and you make the move, man. You go get him. But it does change. It changes, again, it changes the outlook of the position for the better in theory. We'll see more as this goes on, but – one position change, man, and there's a lot of different angles and elements and ideas to consider here.
Well, one thing we did, and Brett brought this up himself, you're not keeping Isaiah Williams there. So, you know, the idea here is Brandon Peters is your starter. They're still trying to push him to be better. Art Sitkowski started Big Ten games. He's got 15 Big Ten starts, not all of them very good, but Brandon Peters has, what, 20-something Big Ten starts? Not all of them very good, right? So at least you get Art there. If Brandon slips up, they could say, hey, we got this guy who's started almost as many games as you. So don't be too comfortable here. So I think their idea is, and I know their idea is, Brandon for a year, Art is the insurance policy, but then Art learns for a year, learns the offense, and they get more out of him, develop him, his decision-making, all of that. And he's your guy for two more years because he's got 3 years of eligibility left. He's played 3 years in college, but he got a red shirt his sophomore year because he only played in three games, and last year was a free year. So you still got 3 years of eligibility out of him, and he's, what, 21 years old? So you got some age at that position now. You got some experience at that position, and he can be that bridge guy, something that Lovie Smith's staff didn't have early on, didn't get, which ever. Was a huge yeah, mistake ever. For them. So at least you have a bridge guy that can kind of just keep you afloat, but you still want to upgrade. Is that upgrade on the roster? Like, is there someone that can get in front of Sitkowski? They don't make this move if they think so, right? So Matt Robinson, Caron Taylor, this feels like the last chance, right? So if you want to step up, you get, you know, if Caron Taylor wants to pass up Matt Robinson, or Matt Robinson wants to be the number three guy, or push Art Sitkowski, now is the time. Deuce Spann, man, he's got talent. He's 6'5". He runs incredibly well, like a track athlete. He's got a huge arm. He's not very accurate though. And that's what he's got to work on. But ceiling wise, as high as there is on this roster with Brandon and Art. So Samari Collier, I think, is coming from a really good DeSoto program, more of a pocket passer, actually, than most of these guys we're talking about. So for those guys, like, hey, there's an open window here to be the backup guy next year, to push Art next year. So it'd be very interesting to see what comes out of that, because, you know, Isaiah was kind of blocking them. You thought, hey, this is the guy for the next 3-4 years. Art Sikowski could be here 3 years, but I think there's a little bit of an opening there, but it's only a little bit, because then Donovan Leary's coming. Then probably next offseason they're adding someone else possibly. So the guys behind them, I think it's now or never, outside of Deuce and Samari.
Yeah, what a great point on Isaiah, because he was kind of this block, because after like this season, it got to the point where it's like, how can they move him any lower than 2? You know, I mean, it just felt like 2 was the floor, but I don't know that 1 was always the ceiling. Maybe that doesn't make sense. Maybe I sound like Michael Jordan babbling on at that North Carolina game, but I mean, if I were a recruit coming in, it'd be, unless I was like a dude, it'd be hard for me to think I was going to move Isaiah from out of that number 2 spot at worst. And then it's like, is he ever really going to be the number 1? Kind of a weird situation, not a knock on him. Just, you know, when you have a recruit like that who is so coveted, it's kind of a, from the outside, looks like a weird thing. But now you're right. Like 2022, it's, hey, who might be the backup in this thing here? And that's a really, strangely, Jeremy, not a conversation we've had to have much for the last few years, because there were just a lot of backups and a lot of guys who was like, okay, yeah, like Isaiah is a backup, that makes sense. MJ Rivers, that makes sense. Matt Robinson, okay, that makes sense. But now it's like, oh, I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, I guess it could still be Matt, and I don't want to sell him short, or Karan, but feels like there's more of an opportunity there, that spot.
It's a position that is, and Brett mentioned it, like, it gets so much attention. There's a reason, right? Like, this is the position that matters the most. Like, so while his program will be built on offensive line, defensive line, running backs, tight ends, linebackers, and I imagine based on Brett's past, that's where the draft picks are going to come from, right? But you got to have a good quarterback option, because even if it's Joel Stave, or it's Brooks Bollinger, or whoever is playing quarterback, who's a Tolzien, was basically Brett Bielema's guy all those years that they were playing so well, and then he got Russell Wilson. Like, those guys have to still be really efficient. And Illinois has not had efficient quarterback play for a very, very long time. Really, Nathan Shielhaus was really the last one who was really, really efficient. So you got to figure that out, and they got to continue to upgrade. They think Art Sikowski is an upgrade. They think they can get more out of Brandon. And then future-wise, this ain't it, right? Like, Art Sikowski, Karan Taylor, Matt Robinson, Deuce Spann, Samari Collier, like Donovan Leary, there's going to be more changes to that quarterback room, because you got to continually try and upgrade. So while we can try and project this, it's going to look different in a year. It's going to look different in 3 years.
Every quarterback room at every program, right? I mean, it really is. It's the hardest room to keep constant, because there's always, always, always a need for it somewhere. Right? Like, if you're the number 3 guy here, somewhere you can be the number 2 or number 1 guy. It's just changes. And it's not like there's a lot of guys who can switch from quarterback to another position. Certainly it happens. We just spent forever and a day talking about it. But if you're a quarterback, you're probably a quarterback. And like, you got to find a way to maximize those skills somewhere. So there's always just turnover all the time. And you're right. It's a year from now, Jeremy, we're going to be talking, and it's going to look way different.
Yep.
And that's just a fact of things.
Anything else that stuck out today before we say goodbye here, Joey, that you want to get to about Bielema?
Nothing today. I just think Brett lets us in on a lot. I'm still getting used to it. I think he really lets us in on.
It's a little different, huh?
A little bit different.
No, he'll not answer sometimes. He'll go off on his own soliloquy that might not address the question all that much, but he does try to take us inside the program, because you know what he knows? That takes the fan inside the program. And that is really important.
Takes the recruits inside the program.
Yeah, it's really important right now with a program like this. If you're Alabama, you're winning all those football games, you can be Nick Saban and go, all right, I ain't going to do it. Like, you can do all that, right? Like, yeah, you can – well, it's not the best, but, like, he says all right a lot. You can do that, and it doesn't matter. People don't care. Just win, right? But when you're trying to build something, people want to feel like, okay, what are you trying to do here? Oh, I see it. All right, I'm going to go support him. Or I believe, like, that makes sense. Like, that's what he has to do, and he understands that part of the job. So I've been more – like, I didn't expect that, to be honest with you. I thought Brett Bielema would be a better salesman, but he certainly has sold himself through the media as well, because that sells him through the fans.
Can I go on a quick tangent from last week? What a place at Kendra Green's draft party, man.
Oh, what, yes, please. Please, what was that like?
Man, first of all, I didn't ask what his brother does, but that would be like the nicest house I've ever lived in or known anybody to have ever lived in. What a freaking place. You know what, man? It was really, really cool. I was talking to you a little bit during it as we kind of waited, and like, I'm waiting. I felt bad for Kendrick. Like, every time he'd hit the little ESPN, like, the pick is in type deal, all of us got our cameras and put it on him. And I sat there for a while. I'm like, he's going to get a call. Like, what are we doing here?
When did you start? Like, was it pick 50 or, like, what?
It was the first pick of the day. And, like, it was like, all right, man, like, we just, every single time. And I told myself, I'm like, I don't need to do this because he's going to get a call. And then I was like, God, what if he doesn't get the call? Then I'm all the way here. I don't even have the freaking moment on camera. What am I going to do? But, like, that was a long night for somebody who wasn't getting drafted to the NFL, just to, like, as you kind of wait, as the tensions, you know, build a little bit. Like, well, dude, I don't know how these guys do it. Like, that was – and Kendrick just sat there cool as anything, which, like, it was – it kind of joked with Isaiah Gay and Jamal Woods. Both were there. I mean, they're very close with him, so it's Caron Taylor. Like, Jeremy, you've covered Kendrick. This dude is like a blast. Like, he's always talking. I mean, he has this role in some of those
magnetic personality.
Yeah, man. He was, I mean, quiet. And again, man, that's a lot. I'm not blaming him. It's just different. And it showed how much this is.
So, like, Caron was there. Isaiah Gay's close friend was there. Jamal Woods, close friend. Like, were they chatty, or were they all like, was it quiet? Like,
they were talking to each other on the other side of the room, and Caron obviously is from Peoria, so he knew a lot of people maybe that Ken or that Isaiah, yeah, and Jamal did not know, because I mean, childhood friends. But no one really talked to Kendrick, you know, his dad a couple times, and I know Jamal was texting him a little bit, but they were talking to each other and, you know, kind of monitoring it off to the side a little bit. But it was, it was going to happen. Like, Kendrick was going to get drafted to the NFL, but it was like, is it Friday? Who's it going to be? And
well, you texted me about pick 80, and you started to get nervous. And I was like
man, this is tough. Here's the other thing.
Well, because, like, we almost felt like I kept hearing, he's probably going to go day two. Like, but it wasn't a guarantee. Some people had like a fourth round grade on him. Some people had like a fifth round grade on him. But, you know, other people I knew were really, really high on him. And, you know, I was told a couple of days before from somebody kind of in the scouting industry, yeah, he should probably go third round. But once it got to 80, it was like, is it going to happen? Is Joey going to have to go back the next day when it's just not as celebratory? Right. So,
here is my really selfish concern. Like, I had initially planned on just staying there that night and being with friends and family the next day, fully vaccinated. I felt good doing that. So I just took like a Hawaiian shirt and some shorts. And I'm like, I'll be done with work on Friday. It doesn't matter if I, you know, what the apparel is, because I don't have to really like see anybody. And I'm like, oh God, if I have to cover this draft and I look like I just got off of a beach, that's probably a little bit of an issue. But to see Kendrick get that call, and, you know, Lovey called him in the second round, and a lot, you know, everybody in the house, TV muted, all eyes on Kendrick. And I'm like,
because they can't see us from Lovey. Like, maybe Kendrick doesn't understand. Like, did Kendrick think he was going to go top of the third round? Right, because Lovey's calling him. I don't know.
And we're, you know, everyone's like looking, and you hear Kendrick kind of cutting it up a little bit. I'm like, damn, dude, he must be really comfortable with like this coach who's taking him, because he's really cutting it up here. And then he hung out there. That was Lovey. He called me, and in my mind, I'm like, I know that comes from a good place. Like, I know it does. There's no doubt in my mind. But, man, that is a big phone call to be making on a Friday night as this kid is waiting.
Like, Kendrick loves Lovey. Like,
Kendrick had nothing. And again, I wouldn't say this if I thought Lovey was just trying to pull a fast one on Kendrick and get his heart racing. He genuinely cared. He called his father afterwards, and those two had a nice conversation. And then the call from Pittsburgh came in, and, you know, at first it was kind of a slow play. It's like, okay. Then at that point, it's like, well, nobody's going to freaking call him on draft night unless they're taking him at this point. We've already seen this show once. We're not going to see it again. So he gets up, and then it just went absolutely crazy in there. And man, it is a whirlwind after someone gets drafted. He was on the phone with, you know, everybody in Pittsburgh who wanted to know everything about him. He was just in the organization. Then he had a Zoom with the media, and it was really cool for Kendrick. And a third round pick. It's been a little bit since Illinois had that. And Kendrick, boy, he is a large human being, man. I will tell you what. Like,
he's like undersized for the NFL, Joey.
Yeah, that is what blows my mind, because like we've only seen them at afar or through a screen for the last year and a half. And dude, that is a huge human. And so is Isaiah Gay.
Yeah,
Isaiah Gay is massive, like just a massive individual.
Yeah, let me tell you, like it was one of the first camps I covered when I took this job. Was up in the Chicago suburbs, forgot where it was. It was an Under Armour camp. And Kendrick Green is there, and you know, being a Peoria kid, I knew him. He had, I think, a bunch of MAC offers at that time, is kind of a center in the MAC. And I remember talking to him after the camp, but he was pretty good, but he was kind of small. Like, his chest was like, you know, looked like he was in junior high a little bit. He's a bigger kid than me, obviously, but he wasn't filled out. And people were like, is this guy strong enough? And then Minnesota offered. And then all of a sudden, Iowa comes in with an offer after he goes off his junior year. And then Illinois, Notre Dame, like all these big time schools, and Brett Bielema down in Arkansas offered him as well. And he just absolutely blew up, and he bought in the in-state thing. And Illinois was actually doing that well in the first year with Lovie Smith. And Kendrick was a huge early get, and he ends up Lovie Smith's first Illinois draft pick, really, that he recruited there. So pretty cool. Pretty cool that kind of comes full circle there. This guy who was 230, 240 pounds at the time, and now he's like this huge hulking man that's known for his strength and physicality. Pretty cool.
I'll tell you, my first year on the beat, it was right after the Larry Boyd had left that offseason and went. And the question for me, I remember driving over there with Mark Tupper, and he was, you know, catching me up a little bit. I was asking questions like, well, who's going to be the guard, do you think, right? Like, and then just sure as anything, out trouts Kendrick Green. It wasn't even a secret, dude. And it did not even waver, if I remember right. It wasn't like they cycled in X, Y, and Z to play guard. It's like, Kendrick Green's our guard, and we're just going to move this thing forward, and this is what it's going to be. And he was a redshirt defensive lineman last year, we know, but this is the plan here. And it freaking worked. It worked, and he made it work. He worked really hard to make it work and got himself in the third-round draft pick and a pretty nice payday.
All right, Joey, can I ask, how are you feeling as a Packers fan right now?
Oh, boy, I almost cussed. not good at all. I would say not good at all, man. It's just, I feel like it's a matter of time, right? Those are really, really heavy comments, and it's hard to get out of them.
For all I know, Aaron Rodgers will like re-sign with the Packers. They'll make amends. He'll get the money or the contract or whatever. Like, Aaron's just playing some long game, and to break this on draft night is so Aaron Rodgers, who I think like is my favorite quarterback to ever watch. Like, he's just, I love watching. Tom Brady is more decorated, has won more. He's the GOAT. But I just love watching Aaron Rodgers. And if I had to start a team, it'd probably be with him. It's just weird. I just love watching him play, even though I'm a Bears fan. But he's a weird dude. And he is so calculated, and he is so vindictive, that the quote he gave to Rico about, like, this is not, like, I didn't want it to break that way. BS, man. You wanted to own
that way.
You wanted to own the draft, and you're one of the few guys who could break a story like that and have it happen and to take over the draft. For all I know, like, in the Bears fan in me, that just like Illinois fans feel this way as well. Like, Aaron Rodgers will be there. He'll be there the next 2 years and haunt my dreams and beat the Bears every time. And Justin Fields won't work out, right? But for at least this weekend, I felt better about my team than you did, which is like just a small little victory that I don't usually get over Packers.
Dude, I have no reason to feel like I'm going to get kicked in the shins repeatedly being a Packers fan. Yes. But I feel like that. Like I'm just waiting for this to just completely blow up. And I really think it's going to be hard to come back. I just do. I think those – he knew what he did. They were heavy comments. It's continued to trickle out over the next few days. Denver didn't take a quarterback. And then in my mind, I got to the point where I was like, freaking trade him. Just get this ninth pick. Get as much as you can. Let's just move this thing along. And then after a few minutes, I came back down. And then I thought, boy, this is what Illinois fans are feeling like with this basketball thing. Like, you go through all this roller coaster and – I don't know. At least they drafted, right? I would have liked to see him, frankly, a little bit of a homer because I enjoyed covering. I would have liked to see them take Kendrick with that pick they took the center and guard.
Buckus reunion?
If I read Kendrick right, I think he maybe thought that could have happened. He did, you know, have a little bit of a reaction to that pick. But, yeah, him and Luke Buckus could have biked around Green Bay to training camp and all of that.
Luke loves his bike, man.
Boy, would it have been beautiful. But
does not love us media, but he loves that bike.
He does. Yeah. Boy, he'd hang out in a bike store by himself before he talked to us if he didn't have to, man.
So how did you feel when the Bears traded up for Justin Fields?
Like hell. I felt like hell.
Like, did you actually feel nervous, or are you just like, oh, the Bears will screw it up?
Like, it happened, and my buddy is a Packers fan, texting. He's like, dude, don't do it. He's like, just take Mac Jones.
I was like, you probably thought that was actually going to happen because I had a moment.
Like, boy, that'd be sweet if they did that. And then I thought, it'd be a cool intrigue. And then I thought, it's not intriguing if Aaron's gone and they have Justin Fields. That is just misery every freaking Sunday. Because look, man, and where we live, Jeremy, like it's not like I can just like avoid. I'm not one of those fans who's like hates the Bears with every bit of my being. But I don't like him very much. And like living here, you can't get away from it. It's just all over the place. And I understand why. I mean, people we interact with on Twitter and follow on Twitter, you be in the profession or elsewhere, like they're Bears fans. Like a Sunday on Twitter during football season is just like
glorious for you.
Yeah, this Bears party and then some random 30-year-old complaining the Packers are down by 7 in the first quarter and the end is here. But yeah, I didn't love it, man. And I didn't love it because it's a great pick for the Bears.
I got to tell you, Joey, this will tell you about my Bears fandom. It was one of my favorite sports moments in a long time. Like I enjoyed some of the early season stuff where we just kind of like, we knew this was like, how are we winning these games? This is so, I kept saying this is the funnest dumb season, like because we're 5-1. It's like, this isn't real. We all knew it. And I was like, just have fun with it. But then when you lose the first round of the playoffs in the Nickelodeon game and you got the 20th pick, you're just thinking, oh, we're in purgatory. This is my hell, right? Like, and we're not going to get a quarterback in this great quarterback draft. And everyone has every reason not to like Ryan Pace or not to like Matt Nagy. But the one thing I've always loved about Pace is, man, he goes for it. He's got conviction. He's aggressive. And he got aggressive for who I think is the right guy. And
it better was just, hope it is, man, because he ain't getting aggressive again in Chicago if it's not.
You saw Atlanta take Pitts, which I would have done too. And then you saw 7 go off the board, and it's not Fields, and they don't trade it. And then 8, Carolina takes a cornerback. 9, Denver. I was like, oh, God, Justin Fields would be perfect there. But Aaron Rodgers, that could be the one spot. It feels like the one spot that makes sense right now with all the weapons they have, the pass rushers they have, that could be a spot for him.
Peyton Manning 2.0.
Yeah. So I'm like, get by that pick. Just get by that pick. And he did. And I was like, call 10, 11, 12, like do it, do it, do it. And then the Bears come up on the call. I'm like, this is happening. This is actually happening. And like just how long it took to get to that pick. And you're thinking, it's going to be Mac Jones, isn't it? Like, or we're going to take some other position. And then when they actually, like after 2 minutes of the Carlos guy in the military, salute to you, sir. Like it's like, just get the pick, just say it. But like, it was like, man, the suspense is terrible, but I hope it lasts. Cause it was just like, they finally said it. I actually let out a scream. I was like, we did the thing I want to do. Like, this actually, I'm a Bears fan. This doesn't happen. But he is the quarterback I am most excited about to ever wear a Bears uniform. It was Cutler. It was him. Like, Cutler was my guy before that. I was excited about that trade. I would have done it again. He was so talented. Trubisky, I was like, at least we got a quarterback, but is that the guy I want? I don't know.
No one felt good about that.
I guess we'll find out. It was kind of exciting just to have a quarterback, but I was like, I don't know enough about that guy. I saw Deshaun Watson play so many big games. I didn't want Mahomes at the time. I was like, that guy, I don't know. I've never seen him play. Like, so for me, it was like Watson. This one feels like Watson to me. Like, I take the off the field stuff, but like, this one felt like this is a big game guy. I felt like every other team overthought it, and the Bears didn't. The Bears went, we've seen enough of this guy. Sure, not perfect, but he's going to be a starting good quarterback in the NFL, and with the potential to be the franchise guy we've wanted for a long time. Maybe it don't work out as we hedge again, but I would have gone all in on that guy too.
You had to. Where you're at right now, you had to. Are you living that 20th pick until the end of time, right? I mean, you had to. It's quite a crazy day. Real quick, shout out to Nate Hobbs, man. Fifth round pick. Did not necessarily anticipate a fifth round pick, but I'm glad to see him get drafted. He's got
never a doubt, Joey. Never a doubt over here.
Good for him, man. He's got every measurable you possibly could want, and we'll see. I think a new scheme could be really good for Nate. Obviously, we've seen a lot of really good tape on him, and it's still, you know, the 2020 wasn't great. It's still such a hard season for me, and in all of it, everything that encompassed 2020. I'm not trying to excuse, you know, some of his lapses, but there's certainly enough reasons where you would raise an eyebrow. But good for Nate, man. This fun weekend, NFL draft.
Yeah,
dominate cycles, dude.
And a dude that's overcome so much in his life that it's awesome. And shouts to his mom, who's done an unbelievable job with him, and his uncle who passed away earlier this year. That happened before the season. That he was so close to him, too. So Nate's overcome a lot. So he gets a shot, man. He's got to get a shot. Obviously, he's a fifth-round pick. He's got all the talent in the world. So good to see a couple of Lana get drafted. And hopefully they get more of that. And hopefully we're doing a big Vidarian Lowe story or, you know, somebody else on this team next year, because it's awesome to see those guys realize their dreams. All right, Joey, long one, but I think we covered all the topics. Appreciate it, man. Get some sleep.
All right, man. We'll see you.
That's it. That's all I got. We'll get Derek Piper on this podcast. We'll talk more about what Illinois basketball is going through, because obviously a big change in that program as well. Thanks for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, give us a follow, subscribe to us, rate us, review us. We appreciate when you do that. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.